Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We are back on The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar. Still unpacking Canada's loss to Belgium on match day, what was it, four? The World Cup? But for now, we will get into some Leafs action here. I believe Luke Fox is with us now. Sportsnet's Leaf reporter. Hanging out in Jersey, I assume.
Dodging cans of beer.
Was there any worry for your health down there at the Prudential Center, Luke?
You know what, guys? I have to be completely honest. I'm not on this road trip.
Wow.
That's our fault.
Hey, probably for the best. Safety first.
Yeah. Just assumptions. Yeah, no. You know what they say about assumptions.
I caught wind that it could be a dangerous environment, so I decided to sit this one out. I'm just still stewing over that penalty shot, though. Oh my goodness! But
Let's go. Yeah, let's get some World Cup takes here.
I watched the game from home. What's that?
Yeah, let's get some World Cup takes here, quick.
Oh no, I'm just so conflicted because I loved how they played. I just think they deserved a better fate. And when I woke up this morning, all I could think about was that missed opportunity, that penalty shot, because I think it would have been a different game from there. But I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged. They hung well.
I like that emotion. I think we were trying to like distill it into one emotion yesterday. We were talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I think encouraged might be the best way to go after that, because there's still opportunity here. And there's reason to be very hopeful, but there is reason also to be disappointed after what was a great showing, but an unfortunate result. Kind of the opposite in New Jersey for the Toronto Maple Leafs yesterday, having three goals called back out of their own net, I guess. They seemed a little bit fortunate to get that victory. They were the Belgium of that Canada-Belgium game, and they ended up getting the victory. First off, have you ever seen like a situation like that? Three goals called back. We've seen protests before, some of which involve, you know, jerseys or waffles or whatever. But this one was a full out, you know, every can of beer that was halfway full was hitting the ice. Have you ever seen anything like that?
I've definitely seen fans throw stuff on the ice for sure. That one seemed pretty chaotic for November. You know, usually you save that kind of vigor for like a playoff game, maybe at the Sky Dome. But for a mid-season game. But I think it speaks to just how enraptured the Devils fan base have gotten on this young, high-flying team and their record, or not record, but their rip here with 13 games, trying to extend it to 14. And on one hand, like, it's dangerous and there's no reason to ever take it that far, and it's ridiculous and it delays the game. And, you know, Mitch Marner was saying that Rasmus Sandin almost got hit by a can, and John Tavares had a great line where he said it felt better to beat the crowd than it did the Devils after the game. Like, you know, that John Tavares isn't one that to bring out the highly quotable lines, but that was a great one. But on the other hand, you're kind of like, it's great that fan base is into the game and passionate, and it's a mid-season game. And I've been to some other games there, and the atmosphere has been very lacking. Like, that franchise has gone through some really sleepy seasons of late, not up to their previous Stanley Cup kind of caliber enthusiasm. So I think on one hand, you are a little bit happy that fan base is so engaged with a fun, exciting team. That doesn't excuse the throwing of the stuff, though.
Especially because it was the calls were justified. Like, those are the rules. You can't, it wasn't like a decision that was made that was questionable, in my opinion. I think the rules are the rules, and read the rule book. But nonetheless, we like passionate fans, no problem about it. But I think maybe one of the biggest things from this game is we have another injury. I don't know if this team is cursed. What's going on here? We need to sage Scotiabank Arena because the Raptors are falling apart in terms of health, and so are the Maple Leafs. But they're doing this. They're winning or playing competitively here with a skeleton of a defense core. How much have you seen the Leafs as a team on the front end and the goaltending kind of dial it in here and be able to play a really strong defensive team with the fact that they're missing some of their best players that are sidelined due to injury?
It's the best storyline, I think, that of the Maple Leaf season. You know, the fact that you're missing your 1, 2, and 3, basically. You're taking millions and millions of dollars out of your back end with Morgan Riley, TJ Brody, and Jake Muzzin all sidelined. And the fact that it seems to be a commitment from not only from the blue liners that are in and dressing, but the forwards as well. You know, it seems like a long time ago people were talking about, you know, has Sheldon Keefe lost this room? Mm-hmm. Well, he's got them to buy in defensively. And, you know, there's a commitment from the forwards to help out too. And I think, you know, Sheldon Keefe described it as a character win, and it's hard to argue with that. Like, everyone was on board helping out. They realized the situation. And then the other half of that is Matt Murray. You know, the fact that he goes down after one game and you think, are we in for Peter Mrazek 2.0 here? Is this guy, A, going to stay healthy? And if he is healthy, is he going to be able to stop the puck? Well, in his four appearances, they've gotten at least a point in every single one of them, and they've won three of them. And for my money, he was the first star last night. Like, he was phenomenal. You know, we talk about the Leafs playing a good defensive game, and, I mean, it helps getting up 2-0 and kind of be able to withhold the storm. But when you look at the game, they were under siege. Like, the Devils had 13 high-danger chances at even strength. The Leafs only had 5. If you don't have solid goaltending, you don't come out of there and survive with a one-goal win. So kudos to Matt Murray, because I'm definitely in the camp that was skeptical that this guy could do it. And so far, he's starting to prove people wrong. I mean, he has to sustain it for a longer stretch than this, but this is a very positive development that they have a goalie that they can count on. And the timeliness of it with Samsonov being sidelined.
So, yeah, the concern with Murray was like two-pronged, right? It was the health thing and it was the performance thing. Maybe too soon through 5 games to not have to worry about the performance thing again. But if the defensive standard stays as is and Matt Murray continues to play even close to what he's given so far, is it become just that one concern? Like, I feel like the injury thing will never quite leave, because just the way he plays the game looks like he's susceptible to injury sometimes. But are you getting to the point there where we're almost there with, we don't have to worry about performance with Matt Murray?
I'm warming up to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's a funny game, right? It's a streaky game. Goaltenders get hot and cold. Shooters get hot and cold. You never want to draw, you know, grand conclusions based on a 4 or 5 game sample. But this is just a very positive development. And, you know, I think one of the things that people were saying and a very smart theory was, okay, Matt Murray struggled in Ottawa, but let's see him behind a better defense. Because the Senators, you know, they play a brand of hockey and they just don't have the horses back there to protect the goalie. They don't play enough with the lead. So let's see him as a Toronto Maple Leaf, a team that, you know, should be able to provide a goalie with a little bit more run support, although the scoring isn't the way the Leafs are doing it right now. And they are a better defensive team than the Senators. So they should make the goalie look better. And that's what we're seeing so far last week and a half.
Yeah, shouldn't we just look to Colorado, or maybe to a lesser extent Vegas? Any goaltender that plays in Colorado has great numbers. Like, we had Philip Grubauer get nominated for Vezina, then go fall on his face in Seattle. Now, Alexander Georgiev's in there with the third best goal save rate, or goal save above average rate, in the NHL. It really, like, the conditions is, we lose this too often. And I feel like that's part of the John Gibson conversations. Like, oh, John Gibson's washed, he can't play anymore. He's playing behind one of the worst defenses that you can put out there for a team not trying to win hockey games. I feel like we so often separate the goaltender from the team structure, and that could be the thing about Murray. Because if you play defensively like they are, Murray can be the guy that has won Stanley Cup. So he can play or hit a level that maybe we didn't think when you're a part of an environment that actually gives you a chance to be at your best.
Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%, Justin. I think too often goalies are just looked at individually and not how they're reacting, the relationship they have with the team in front of them, particularly the defense. So I think that's a great point. Now, the thing that concerns me, though, is how, you know, they did it for one night against a very good team, the hottest team in the league. But how long can they keep this going without Riley, Brody, and Muzzin? Mark Giordano played phenomenal last night, but he also played the most ice time that he has as Maple Leaf. He's the oldest skater in the league. He's saying that he wants more ice time, that he's like thriving under this. And so far he's showing that. But with the Jordy Benn question mark now, we got Connor Timmins coming in and joining the team in Minnesota to practice today. This is a guy that, you know, couldn't really stick in the Arizona Coyotes lineup. You know, I think it's a worthwhile flyer, but you got Mac Hollowell making his debut. That was some hard minutes for Sandin and Liljegren. Great game. I don't want to take anything away from last night's win, but how is this going to play out over multiple games? Is Giordano going to wear down? Are younger guys like Liljegren and Sandin up for the tougher matchups? We're going to see. But it makes for a fascinating thing to watch to see if they can prolong this because, you know, so far the signs are positive. But I'm just curious to see how this plays out, especially with Ben's health in jeopardy now. Like, it seems every night there's someone going down.
Yeah, sustainability will be the key here. Wouldn't that be nice to count on some guys making it for maybe a couple more weeks here before the holiday season? All right, Luke, so you mentioned Connor Timmins, and we played a clip of Sheldon Keefe, who said, I don't really know much about him. Neither did we. So what do you know about Connor Timmins? You mentioned he didn't really stick in the Arizona Coyotes lineup, but is there something that you hope he can bring to this lineup other than just being a body that eats some minutes?
Well, he's a right shot. He's a bigger body. You know, he's 6'2", over 200 pounds. There's that Sioux Greyhounds connection that there always seems to be with these moves. You know, Kyle Dubas is traded a forward in Curtis Douglas, you know, and another big guy. And you just cross your fingers that he isn't the next Mason Marchment, right? Like, you know, big guy who maybe finds his stride elsewhere. But one of the things that I had heard about him is that he wasn't playing to his size and he wasn't as close to making the NHL. Like, he wasn't on the brink. And this is more immediate help for a more immediate need. So I get the short-term play here. And it's actually really fortunate that the trade happened the time it did, considering what happened to Ben. I would expect him to see action right away. But, you know, we're talking about another third pairing level defenseman. He's not going to, you know, suddenly step in and change this decor. The hope is that he can eat up some minutes. The hope is, you know, his best days are still in front of him because he's dealt with some injuries. In Arizona. He's only 24 years old. Another kind of, you know, cross your fingers, hope that you find a gem here, or at least hope you find another depth option that can step in situations like this. And it helps that he's a little bit bigger than Mac Hollowell, and it helps that he's a right shot. But we'll see, you know. You know, I wouldn't set the bar too high, but it's another guy who can play.
Along with the discussion of the forwards helping this team play better defensively, I think there's an interesting contrast between maybe not two of the power brokers, but two that are fitting in different ways right now. I think Pontus Holmberg, yeah, he gets off the schneid, gets his first NHL goal. That's great stuff. But they were kind of looking for something here for a little while with the bottom six, something that made the pieces work. And he's not like the centerpiece by any means, but he might kind of be the key to unlocking what works in the bottom six. And I guess on the other side of that is Nick Robertson, who finally gets back into the lineup. But when you talk about how well they have been playing defensively, it almost put a highlight on Nick Robertson, who looked out of place, I thought, at times in last night's game and is still struggling with that side of the game. And it's pretty obvious why Keefe doesn't completely trust him if he's got to rely on his forwards. He needs everyone to be playing and dialed in defensively to make up for that. So just what do you make of those two players and how their seasons have reached this current point?
Yeah, well, Holmberg's pretty interesting because I don't think a lot of people had him as the first call-up. But the reason why he's here is because Sheldon Keefe is trying to find someone to play center. And he's, you know, coming into camp, there was all this talk about, well, we got all these versatile guys, and Kerfoot can play some center, and Yarncroke can play some center, and Engvall can play some center. Well, he tried all three of those guys at center. He even tried Nylander at center one game. And it doesn't work. It turns out all those guys are better on the wing. So he wanted a pure natural center, someone who can take faceoffs, someone who's used to patrolling the middle of the ice, puts defense ahead of offense, and that's Holmberg. You know, it's great that he got his first NHL goal, great moment for the guy, turns out to be the game winner. But that really isn't his bread and butter. Like, he didn't even score a goal with the Marlies before his call-up this season. Mm-hmm. He is defense first, and that seems to align with the coach's priority heading into this season. He's really drilling down the defensive responsibility on his forwards, and it's paying off. So he fits the mold. He fills a need that the coach wanted, something that other guys tried to fill, and it wasn't a good fit, whether it was Kerfoot or Yarncroke or Engvall. Those guys are all better on the wing. So it just makes more sense for what Keith is trying to accomplish. And, you know, you're not going to notice him most nights, and that's probably a good thing. As for Robertson, I think the fan base and observers want to see this guy thrive because he has those electric capabilities. Like, if he gets the puck in open ice, he's the kind of guy that could rip it past a goalie and beat a goalie clean. But he's at a stage now where his game is not at the level where Sheldon Keefe can trust him in all situations. He sat for four games. Malgin kind of won that spot, and now he's was given another look, you know, thrown into the fire in a pretty intense environment against arguably the fastest team in the league. And yeah, he looked a little out of place at times, but I think you have to make a decision. You can't just do it every single day. He's in, he's out. I think you got to give him a stretch of games and see if he can hang. And I like him in that second line role because I think if he is going to stick in the NHL, he has to be put in a position where he can use his offensive capabilities, because that's his greatest asset. The best way he can contribute to the team is by providing some secondary scoring. So I like him up in the top six. You know, he was talking the other day before they left on the road trip how much he likes the power play, and he's like, even if we only get 30 seconds or 20 seconds on the second power play unit, I want to make an impact. Like, he wants so badly to make an impact on this team. I just don't know if his greatest assets align with what the coach wants. And it feels like it's going to be a constant struggle, but I think you have to give it some run, because if he's sitting for four games and in for one, I don't know how he gets traction.
Yeah, I wondered if he could be kind of the weapon on a, not a conservative defensive unit, but a weapon on, and sort of a different look on what would be, or still really defensively reliable line, third line, if that would work. Maybe if you put him with David Kampf and Cali Yarncroke, you got something there that can be both defensively responsible and have that little pop of offense. But it does seem more and more like he only really belongs in that second line left winger role and the secondary power play role. And in order to stay there, not that he has to put up points, but at least he's got to show that some of that defensive ability is coming in, because he can just go the other way if the goals aren't coming as well. Mitch Marner's point streak lives on. It might have actually been his single best moment of the season, that setup for John Tavares. And throughout this streak, though, it hasn't been the flashiest. It hasn't been what it was last night with that, like, something out of nothing moment. But I think old Mitch, or Mitch Marner, has found old Mitch within this run. Even if it hasn't been like the most convincing thing ever, he's sort of found himself while continuing to pile up the points over the last couple of weeks here.
Yeah, I think he's been the most consistent forward in the last couple of weeks. And you're right. Like, there were a lot of secondary assists and some power play cookies mixed in during this streak. But still, to be able to put up a point for 14 games straight, you know, which is a personal best, and have two streaks of 13 or more in one calendar year is just phenomenal. Over the past 30 years, only five guys have done it, and Marner's one of them. So his consistency and the fact that, you know, he's also so good defensively and he kills penalties and, you know, he's out there for the last minute of games, whether they need a goal or they're trying to prevent a goal, and his willingness to do so many things. And I think it's just, it's kind of a coach's dream. And sometimes I think he doesn't get enough credit for how good he is in this market. I think because of his contract and how that played out, I think that still lingers in the back of a lot of fans' minds. The other thing is, you know, they associate him with not winning around, mm-hmm. but you know, what he's done now, what he did last season, you know, it took him a little time, both seasons, to get revved up, but now he's in the flow. And I actually had a really good conversation with a buddy of his, Matt Martin, when the Islanders were in town this week. And he said, like, any team in this league would love to have Mitch Marner. He's like, you don't understand. He said, it's really hard on him. He's like, and he said that the weight of the world is on this kid, because unlike Austin, he lives in this city all year round. He feels it. And he also said that the playoff success that these guys had, the fact that they made the playoffs in their rookie year when they were so young, kind of raised the expectations and the pressure on them. And at the time, I think the whole city thought this was like this wonderful thing. They made the playoffs so fast and they, you know, exceeded expectations in that first year. But when you step back and look in hindsight, maybe it had a bit of a negative effect. And you know, you think about a team like the Devils, you know, this young team, and they didn't have success right away. And now they're finally finding their groove, and there's a lot of excitement. Whereas Toronto just spiked as soon as Matthews and Marner and Nylander were in the league together, and they got to the playoffs right away. And now it's like we're constantly saying, show us more, show me more. Well, that's pretty good, Mitch, but let's see more. And I think the expectations are almost out of whack, and sometimes we've got to sit back and appreciate just how dynamic of a player he is and what he's doing for John Tavares, too. I love those two together.
Guy, I think that they should not be moving off that anytime soon. And in terms of the fan base maybe feeling a little hesitant to give the love and respect that maybe these players deserve, is because it's all about show me when it matters, get through a playoff round or two or three, because that's kind of how we evaluate here in the city, is success and winning and not small moral victories, as we talked about with Canada and maybe last night, keeping the or breaking the streak against the Devils. Luke, appreciate you joining us this morning, and glad you're safe here in the city of Toronto, not in New Jersey.
All right. Go Canada.
Go Canada. Love it. Luke Fox, Sportsnet Leafs reporter for us, who avoided the garbage tossing moment last night.
Yeah, nothing coming from the press box, I assume.
I think they'd have to be throwing upwards.
Yeah. Well, it might be a couple of just like overhand right up. It's like a full-out riot. Maybe a couple of things are going up before they go down. Let's get to something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
So John Herdman, Canadian coach, had his at least took a little page out of the Masai Ujiri handbook yesterday. Ooh. He was fired up after the game, and he delivered this quote after... You noticed that, by the way? He was in the middle of the pitch, and, like, everybody was hanging on every word that he was saying.
Yeah, your boy John Herdman. Electric guy.
You love Herdman. How about that hair, by the way?
He is sculpted by the gods.
the barber. I was talking, you know.
Yeah, I meant to.
Anyway. The god being the hairdresser in Qatar. Okay. Anyway, looked fantastic, and it was a fantastic scene out there. But I guess he took that fire to the media session and said, when asked what he told his team, I just told them they belong here and we're going to go and F Croatia next. It's as simple as that. And I'm not, you know, censoring him at all. That's exactly what he said.
He said the letter F.
He said the letter F, so you can put whatever sort of spin on that you like. He was asked, of course, about that today by a Croatian reporter. And this is how Herdman responded today. It's not massively respectful, he admits, to Croatian people and the national team. But in that moment, you're taking your team to the next place. We're here to be fearless. So I kind of love all of it. I kind of like that he handled it the way he did. He's saying it's not like not massively disrespectful, mm-hmm. but he's not, you know, taking the foot off the gas. I feel like that's what we want out of him in this moment. We want him to try and continue to inspire that group. I don't want him to stand down from those comments. No. I loved it in the moment. And I feel like it sort of embodies what this team is right now. And the fearless aspect is what we need or we think they need to be. And I think what Herdman is inspiring in that group.
But it's on the other side, one of those things that the Croatian team puts up on their locker room.
You think they do it?
They write out the quote and... Croatian. That's right, right?
Yeah. Don't put me on the spot. I've been there too. That's so embarrassing.
They put it up on the wall and they look at it before the game. So you're putting fuel in the fire and you just got to walk the walk if you're going to talk the talk. And yes, Croatian is correct.
Unafraid. Unafraid is the attitude that we want to see from this team. And we will not talk about languages spoken in different countries moving forward.
Let's take a break. That was your chew, something to chew on. We're going to talk to our guy, Michael Grange, about a team also dealing with multiple players sitting in the stands. Your Toronto Raptors, who dropped a valiant first half effort, but just couldn't beat some of the best players in the world. The Brooklyn Nets, who were basically a full-fledged team coming into town. You saw Drake there courtside, though. So maybe the first Drake appearance of the year. He was on the, you know, he was on the mic for a little bit there.
I feel like we see him once before, but you know, it's becoming few and far between.
Did you see his outfit?
No.
He was wearing this massive teddy bear jacket, like a big old plush mink jacket with two teddy bears on the jacket. It was just you know, it's not my Christmas wish list for that, but
another small thing that would suck about being a celebrity. Like, there's a lot of things that suck, the attention nonstop. You can't wear the same outfit twice, right?
No.
So you got to go to these weird extents where you got to wear teddy bears.
It.
I know, but like, just throw on a black t-shirt, man.
Take a look at it during the break. It's strange. All right, we're going to talk to Grange after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Joined by 3-point Grange, Sportsnet Raptors reporter. Probably needed him out there on the court, hitting a couple threes for the boys last night. Are you next up on the bench here with the lack of bodies for the Raptors?
I think I'm capable of standing up and cheering at the right times.
It's not that hard, eh?
You know, if they want to pay me a vet minimum to do that, then I would humbly accept, but... Realistically, no. That's all I could offer. But they do need some three-point shooting. They're the worst three-point shooting team in the league over the last five games.
Why?
And I think a little bit is personnel. Mm-hmm. You know, they're best. Some of their best three-point shooters haven't been available. Gary Trent, who's in theory one of their best three-point shooters, has been in a horrible slump, and you know was only worse last night, mm-hmm. At least from behind the arc. And, you know, I think at a certain point become, you know, I think they would tell you and they keep telling you that, you know, the shots they're taking are open, they're good shots and they might be, but, you know, I think something's not going right because they certainly aren't going in. I think they're about 24% over that stretch. And, you know, I don't know how winnable that game was last night, but I mean, you know, if you go through box score data, you know, and you find games where teams out-rebounded the other team by double figures and they made more free throws than the other team by a double-figure margin and they, you know, had a healthy edge in turnovers and then they took 19 more shots. Like, I think if you were to isolate for all those factors, like the team that does that wins probably 90% of the games. Like, it's like almost impossible to lose when you're taking 20 more shots and making that many more free throws. But, you know, when the other team makes 10 more threes than you do and you're that's 30 points. You know, it's hard to make that up. That's happened to them more than once now.
Really, really frustrating start for mainly the injury situation, what Nick Nurse has at his disposal. But is it sort of a frustrating start to try and tell the story of this team? Because, I mean, it's so far away from the norm with all the injuries and the key starters unavailable, the players that are being used at the depth. You know, they're not just celebrating at the end of the bench. They're having to actually strip off the sweatsuit and get onto the court. So are you having trouble, like, actually making sense and figuring out what's meaningful from the last couple weeks? Because it just seems like it's so far from what's, you know, what we actually expected.
Yeah, I think more significantly, you know, Nick Nurse is, you know, I've asked him these kind of questions multiple times, and he literally is throwing up his hands and shrugging, which isn't to say he's, you know, mailing games in, but, you know, he's, look, I take no, he, this is, these are his words, basically, you know, but he takes no information or insight from any of the statistical trends that we might be talking about or might want to pour through to explain what's going on or you know, in one game or a stretch of games, because the lineup's been different every night, and the people you, that you point out, that you kind of would be depending on in a more typical or critical situation aren't available. And if they are, they're, you know, they're not really themselves. So, you know, they really, I think the emphasis right now for them internally is just, you know, just keep plugging along. Don't lose touch with the rest of the East. Don't end up making, you know, turning, you know, they're 9-9. Don't, you know, don't, they could have easily been, you know, 6-14 or whatever the number is. I don't know. I can't do the math, but you know what I mean? So, you know, and you can look at some of these games and go, well, you know, they could have even done a little better. So, I mean, I think if they can kind of stay in this pool you know, I think they were 8-10 last year at this point. So, you know that things can change, and it is still fairly early. So I think, you know, I would say that the encouraging thing is that they do have a blueprint, and that's Coach Jacques Vaughn was mentioning this before the game, is as you can close your eyes and kind of see what a Raptors team looked like. And, you know, some of those numbers I was mentioning, particularly the turnovers and the, you know, the shot differential, you know, which they generate generally from turnovers and offensive rebounds, like that's, they're very committed to that, and they're number one in the league at doing it. And, you know, as long as they can at some point make more than 35% of the shots they do take, and, you know, they don't. And, you know, I think if one thing you could say, Justin, is, you know, with the group they have, you know, maybe their lack of familiarity or talent, you know, when they do sell out on the offensive boards, or they do sell out, you know, in passing lanes and try to really be very disruptive, they're, you know, they don't, their margin for error when it doesn't work is very slim. And that's why teams are shooting 54-55%. And that's what's very difficult to overcome. So, you know, on one hand, on the positive side, is they are committed and they are executing a style of play. And, of course, on the negative is, you know, they just can't quite get it over the hump.
And they can't quite stay healthy or string together a couple stretches of a full bench. And that's just the way she goes. Maybe, and we just said it, but sage Scotiabank Arena, because the Maple Leafs are dealing with injuries. Now the Raptors are dealing with injuries. But that's kind of what you have to play through when you're a professional sports team. So Nick Nurse's comments on Gary Trent Jr. made a little bit of headlines there, calling him out. I think it was a couple days ago now, saying it was disappointing. He kind of fits us if he does that, and if he doesn't, he doesn't fit us in terms of his defensive
play. If he plays good, he fits. If he doesn't play good, he doesn't fit.
Shocker. Yeah. What do you make of the, we use this word, but the bullets that Nick Nurse uses in terms of going to the media to call out players, and if that is a successful trend, or why maybe he chooses those moments to do so?
I think he's one. I support it. You know, like,
oh, like, certainly, I think, as well.
You know, and I think I'd be very surprised and in fact shocked if any of these occasions when, you know, he kind of delivers what's really an honest assessment of a player. Mm-hmm. Like he's never withering. He's never like, you know, dismissive or anything like that. He's basically just acknowledging or saying when a guy isn't playing well, which, okay, good. You know, and there's zero chance that those discussions aren't already being had with the player. And you know, and the Gary Trent one, you know, I was the person who asked that question. And, you know, it was a pretty simple question. Like, you know, you look at where he was defensively in some of these measures, and again, they're not perfect. A year ago, he doesn't seem to be quite there now. And his answer was, yeah. Like, you know, if he's going to be on his team, you know, those things are really important. And they were a big deal was made of them last year when Gary Trent, you know, really showed him his ability to be a disruptive on-ball defender. Be kind of a passing lane guy as well. That's what made him a very interesting player. And if he's not doing that, you know, he's just a guy. And there's plenty of guys who are just a guy. You don't have to pay them $100 million, which is probably what Gary Trent's going to be looking for in the offseason as a free agent. But the broader picture, you know, I think it's only notable because it's so rare when it happens. In sport generally, where you actually hear, you know, a coach talk honestly about a player's shortcomings. And I don't think I don't think that he's in a position to backfire. I think he's pretty selective about it. It's not a habit. You know, you can kind of, I know Will Lou kind of compiled his own Knicks greatest hits the other day. And, you know, they're over years, right? It's like two or three times a year, usually on a different player. Like, I don't recall him getting in the habit of kind of bullying a player, so to speak, or kind of really picking on a guy. And, you know, as I said, I think, I think Nick's very empowered by management. I think he's smart enough to know when he's doing it and why. And, you know, I've always been of the mind, I'll say this, like, I can promise you that if you're not mentally tough enough to deal with that and kind of take it for what it is, which is an honest assessment of where you're playing, then the Raptors have no interest in you. just think, imagine Masai Ujiri running an organization where, you know, if guys were criticized, they would, you know, have basis to, you know, kind of throw up their hands and ask for a trade or leave or do whatever, you know, crumple, whatever it might be. Like, no, no. And as you shouldn't, because, you know, this isn't, the office. This is professional sports, and this is what the money's for.
In a weird way, it's sort of a testament to the culture where Nick Nurse is respected enough to speak his mind. And I feel like this is a rarity in sports with, you know, athletes maybe wanting to be coached a bit of a different way, but also coaches maybe not having the track record where their authority is what reigns over the entire operation, because we just see so much movement, and clearly Nick Nurse has established himself as a successful coach, but also a winner. I do wonder a little bit about the efficiency rate, though. Like, if you look at the names that Will Lou put out there and the timeline and the tracker there, yeah, it's Chris Boucher's, you know, become a really valuable piece for this team. Pascal Siakam was the first name on that list, and he's the most important player on this team. But a lot of guys that didn't work out, it's not because of those callouts or the criticism or maybe dysfunction or disconnect between Nurse and that player. It's probably more about that player not being at this level anymore. But is there any concern over the track record or the efficiency rate here? Is this a useful tack to go after these players in the way that they are? Or does it just depend on the player and the situation that it is?
I think it's totally fine. You know, like, and again, like, this happens a couple of times a year. I think I think Preston Cichua was hurt it a little bit this year. But that was, I think, after, you know, a pretty lengthy meeting. And then now you've got Gary Trent. And I don't think Nick ever says anything that, like, any of those players can go online and see, right, in spades, you know what I mean? Like, it's never a state secret. It's usually pretty clear what's going on. And as I said, I mean, you know, if you mention – so, yeah, I think it's fine. I honestly think it's fine. I think it's only notable because it doesn't happen all that often. And, you know, I know when Sheldon Keefe dared to say something bad about – couple of his precious babies, right? Like, I mean, all hell broke loose. So, you know, look, like Gary Trent Jr. is a three-point shooter who needs to defend his position well. He's shooting, I don't know what it is after last night, but going into last night, I think he was shooting 18 or 19% from threes last 8 or 9 games. So that's not getting it done. And if you're not getting it done defensively, then, you know, you've got to do better. And, you know, that's totally fair. And there's no chance that Gary Trent Jr. wouldn't agree. And, you know, he showed some signs last night. He's coming off an illness, and it seems to be a problem for some of these guys. This thing seems to linger. So, but we'll find out, right? And if the next 10, 15, 20 games sees more of this, then, you know, there'll be changes. And I don't think Gary Trent's going to be a very strong bargaining position wherever he's playing next summer.
Yeah, there's more honesty was that Gary Trent was dealing with an illness or has been dealing with an illness that could have affected his play and, of course, has kept Fred out of the lineup. We talked about injuries, but illness is piling up. Is there any clarity there on how Fred is doing if it's lasted this long and continues to be an issue? Because, you know, it's of utmost importance that Fred gets back into this rotation given the state of affairs right now.
Yeah, there's not much clarity, and you know, they keep calling it a non-COVID illness, and you know, I think they are actually testing. So, you know, I think they can say that with some confidence. And you know, we were joking, you're kind of joking, is maybe they just don't bother asking anymore. But you know, I think that's my understanding with Fred is he was ill, I think, before the game in against Houston, tried to play through it in OKC, left the game, and you know, came back against Miami, was feeling, you know, he had a pretty good game, played some good minutes, played pretty well. You know, and played a normal turn against Atlanta. And, you know, so I think the one point Nick was making was like, this could be something new because he was pretty fine in between. And, the one thing I would say with Fred is he's got two little ones, right? And, you know, and anyone that's had two little ones at home, they are germ factories. And, you know, so that, it could be as simple as that. But, you know, fingers crossed, right? Like, this is just, you know, this is just, it is just that, and it's not some kind of lingering issue. But we'll maybe get a little more information as we go along here.
Before we let you go, Grange, we have been maybe sleeping on a little bit of how much of an impact Thad Young has been to this team. He played his 1,100th game last night, and you're starting to see the praise, at least from his teammates, saying he's been the MVP here along this stretch. Is that how you view his impact on the team? And I know as a leader, that's sometimes hard to evaluate, you know, what he brings as a leader in terms of your characteristics and stuff. But even his on-court play has been something that I think deserves a lot of praise.
No, he's played great. Like, I think this is his fifth straight start, and he's averaging, you know, he's shooting a good percentage. His box score numbers are good. And then, you know, if you're just watching, he just makes smart play after smart play after smart play. He's, you know, he's a great passer. And he's, you know, he'll, you know, 1,100 games in, age 35, 16 years on the job, and he's, you know, he's on the floor, right? And he's putting his body on the line. He's willing to, you know, he's playing center for a lot of these minutes, and he's engaging with bigger, younger, stronger, faster guys, and, you know, shows no unwillingness to do that. And I think, so I think he's producing. That's number one. And number two, and, you know, we were talking to him last night about his routine and, you know, how he's managed to pull off an 1,100 game career and counting. And he just kind of was talking about it in detail about his post-game routine and his habits and all those things. And I think, you know, his real impact on this team will be felt in years to come. And, you know, it might be in the shape of a Precious Achiuwa. It might be, it's already been, I would argue, a Chris Boucher. It's guys who get to study up close a willing teacher who's an expert in the craft of being a professional athlete. And, you know, and if, you know, it's really one of these things where if you're smart enough and open-minded enough to absorb the lessons that are unfolding right in front of you, you could literally, you know, it could mean $100 million to you. You know what I mean? Like, like there's a kind of a inflection point in most guys' careers, certainly in the NBA. I think it's probably true in hockey and most sports that, you know, you'll get into the league and, you know, you'll be given some chances and, you know, you might get to that 4 or 5 year mark, but then at some point someone's making a decision on you, and it's either, no, you're somebody we're going to invest in, or you're not. And if you're not, you're out of the league really quickly after that point. And one factor that always gets, for all about the most talented guys, right? But for guys who are good enough to be in the league, but good enough not to be too, it always comes down to what are they like as teammates? What are they like as professionals? What are they like as, what are their habits like? And, and if you want to be a guy who's in the league 10 years instead of 5, 12 years instead of 8, Thad Young is a blueprint, and that's a gift that he's willing to offer. And we'll see, and I think that's his real ultimate. I mean, obviously this year's impact is what he's doing on the floor and the rest of it. But there's going to be guys in that room who take those lessons, and 5, 10 years from now, we're talking about them. And there's going to be some guys that maybe don't, and we won't be.
Well, he's certainly been a pleasant surprise, especially down the last couple of weeks here where we've seen more of him and seen his impact on this roster. So, Grange, appreciate you joining us. Don't catch that bug going around the arena, all right?
Yeah, fingers crossed. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Take care. Michael Grange, Sportsnet Raptors reporter. And the Raptors back in action on Saturday against the Mavs at home. Scotiabank Arena, 5 p.m. start.
It's going to be tough. Without the reinforcements, old Luka Doncic coming through, it's never easy under the best circumstances. Quickly, Uruguay and South Korea are going to get involved in a couple minutes here. I'm getting a little, we're getting some action here. Look at little Uruguay.
That's my
money
team.
Line. I'm just like happiness hedging with your team. If they win, I win. That's probably my best strategy.
Is the money
here.
Line like?
It's minus 140.
That's not bad.
I jumped on a little bit of that, and I'll be distracted for the next hour.
Perfect. What else is new? Send in your wake and rake picks for us at 590. We have 3 NFL games sprinkled throughout your day. Great couch day, American Thanksgiving. Just melt into the fabric of the fibers of your suede couch. Don't stand up unless it's an emergency. And you have how many more World Cup games? You have this one starting at 8 a.m. Then you have Portugal, Ghana, and Brazil, Serbia. So we can have any of those in our wake and rake. It's pretty much slim pickings between NFL and World Cup. So send that in at 590-590. We're going to get back into some World Cup discussion after the break with Gareth Wheeler, One Soccer analyst, who will break down if yesterday was a moral victory or if it left you wanting. And I think it could be both. That's next. Justin and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.